the rising trans, the increasing, the rapid escalation of the of transnational corporations, banking institutions, financial institutions, and so on. Around them, there is also coalescing a network of structures of governance. What the world's leading business newspaper, the London Financial Times, describes it as a de facto world government with its own institutions, the IMF, the World Bank, the new World Trade Organization, the GATT, the G7 executive, the executive branches of the seven rich countries. That's a kind of a framework of world government, what they call a de facto world government, that also operates very remotely, in secret, without scrutiny, without accountability. Its primary constituents are, in fact, precisely the transnational corporations and the financial institutions, and it reflects their interest. The new trade agreements, which is a rather misleading term in my opinion, but the trade agreements are accelerating this transfer of effective power to these absolutist, unaccountable institutions, now on a vast scale. Corporations themselves are absolutist institutions. Power lies in the hands of owners and managers. The only debate is about how that's how you divvy out the shares. Debate in literature about that. There's a fairly strict authority structure in a corporation. An individual can sometimes enter into the hierarchy, which means you essentially take orders from above and transfer orders down below. It's a fairly strict hierarchy, as much as any we know of in any institution. If you're an outsider, you're not part of it, you have basically nothing to say. You're allowed to rent yourself to it. That's called getting a job. You can buy what they sell if you like. You can watch. You can't see very much because they operate mostly in secret. And now that they're remote enough to be transnational and have their governing institutions in Brussels and Geneva and so on, they are even more operating in secret. Actually, this is all, you know, well-known and old stuff. I was at a, well, about 10 years ago, I was at a conference in Switzerland on international affairs, and one of the participants was a Swiss diplomatic historian. In fact, he told me he was the Swiss diplomatic historian from the University of Geneva. We got kind of friendly, and we were out having a beer or something one night, and he told me that the worst job in the world is to be a Swiss diplomatic historian. And the reason for that is quite simple. Diplomatic historians are people who look at archival materials primarily. They try to figure out what's going on by looking at the archives. Well, in most countries, there's a sort of a buffer between private power, which basically rules, and policy. The buffer is called the government. And you can look at the, and governments do leave a kind of a paper trail. And we're pretty good at in that respect by comparative standards. So, you know, you wait 30, 35 years, and sometimes even earlier, and you get some kind of a record, in fact, often quite an interesting and complete record of what the government was up to. But in Switzerland, they don't bother with the buffer. The corporations just rule straight. So they make the decisions, the banks and the transnationals and so on, and they don't leave any, corporations don't leave any paper trail at all. They are secret societies. They are secret absolutist organizations. If you learn anything about them, it's because, you know, the multinational operations committee in the in Congress in the mid-70s, under the pressure of the popular movements of the 60s, in fact, got subpoenaed power and released some information about them and occasionally find something out in other ways. But basically, you learn nothing. So being a Swiss diplomatic historian without this kind of intervening level leaves you with not a lot to do, he was complaining. Well, we have something to do because there is this transmission belt, but the picture is, you know, it's not all that different if you think about it, if you think about where power actually is, how decisions are made, and how much you can find out about the centers of power. Well, this has its consequences, naturally. The, for example, the other aspects of the deficiencies of democracy, I can't even use the word, I mean the absurdity of using the term democracy to refer to the Soviet system of tyranny. In various respects, we also have the same features. Information is very narrowly concentrated in pretty much the same hands as other decision making. The media are, the major media are just huge corporations selling people like you selling audiences to other businesses, to advertisers. And that sets the framework within which most of the rest operates. Actually, we have, it's a different information system and all sorts of different properties. One of the properties is that people here have much less access. They have access. They don't seek access to other sources of information. So the proportion of the population here that listens to foreign broadcasts is minuscule. Publications that are outside the very narrow and rigid ideological framework reach a statistically insignificant part of the population, nothing like, say, Soviet Samizdat. There are reasons for that, and they're interesting ones, but again, that's another topic. With regard to popular organizations that permit that people to function in the political sphere, there's very limited. We don't have functioning political parties. We don't have political clubs. There's very little in that way. And furthermore, most people are indeed so busy trying to survive that even if such organizations existed, and even if information were readily available, there'd be a limited amount that they could do with it. And under such conditions, again, democracy is a fairly thin reed. I don't want to suggest that here it's like under Soviet tyranny, but some of the structural properties are quite similar and worth thinking about.